Chapter 2. The Promised Land. On the third floor of the sprawling Hendersonville, Tennessee home where Johnny Cash spent the second half of his life, a small study was lined with the most treasured of his thousands of books. Here he would closet himself away to read, write, listen to music, or just think. Immediately outside the room in his dressing area rested a large black safe in which he kept a cotton bowl plucked from the fields of Dyess, Arkansas, the town of his childhood, as a reminder of where he had come from and of how much he had been blessed. Cash had seemingly always maintained an ambivalent attitude toward his roots, wavering between nostalgia and a desire to forget. Later in life, he became increasingly interested in family history, tracing the origins of his branch of the Cashes back to 17th century Scotland. He held immense pride in the values he had learned by being brought up the hard way. Yet he had little interest in reunions and rarely returned to Dyess, despite the fact it took less than 5 hours to drive there from Hendersonville. Documentary director Robert Elfstrom captured this ambivalence on film in 1968, when together they visited the white clapboard house of Cash's childhood in Arkansas. Cash walked around the deserted building with June and his sister Louise, but instead of recounting happy times, he became unusually pensive. He only stayed a few minutes before wandering alone outside in the cotton field. The visit seemed to have awakened memories that he had long tried to bury. "He walked around, and then I saw that it was obviously bringing up other thoughts," says Elfstrom. "I don't know what those thoughts were. Then he left rather abruptly." Asked about the trip in a 1970 interview, Cash mused, "Every room, every window, every wall had a memory. Some almost bring tears." Cash could never quite bring himself to tell the full story of his early life and the inner conflicts produced during those years. His anger, self-destructive tendencies, and insecurity quite possibly originated with his early relationship with his father, Ray Cash, though in his first autobiography, he expressed nothing but admiration for the man. However, he tellingly dedicated that book to June's father, Ezra Eck Carter, who taught me to love the word. In his second autobiography, published after his father's death, he questioned the authenticity of his father's Christian conversion and rather pointedly asserted that he didn't visit his father's grave any longer. Yet he stopped short of discussing the full extent of the effect his father's behavior had had on his life. Like many of his fellow country farmers, Ray Cash loved guns, but unlike most of them, he seemed to gain an unhealthy pleasure from the process of destruction. He boasted of how he once killed 50 cows with a box of 50 bullets. Cash told his daughter Kathy a story from his teenage years, during which he had had a pet dog that gave birth to a litter of puppies, which his father didn't want. "Grandpa put all the puppies in a bag with a rock in it and threw it in the river, and he made Dad come and watch as they drowned. Then he shot the dog." But, oddly enough, even though such behavior wounded the sensitive Cash deeply as a child and stirred up inner turmoil, Cash almost always maintained that his father never inflicted physical or emotional pain on him. While creating a parent journal, his daughter Tara wants to ask him, "When you needed punishment as a child, which parent corrected you and how?" His response, "My mother swatted me with a fly swatter once. I got smart with her. My dad never touched me in his life." Ray could also be extremely racist and remain that way throughout his life. Though he often talked of the lynchings he witnessed as a child, there were 82 lynchings in Arkansas from the year of his birth until the time he left to go overseas with the Army. There was only one in his hometown, and that was when he was a baby. One of Ray's brothers, a sheriff during the 1920s and a judge during the 1930s, used to boast of his mistreatment of blacks. Even as an old man living in Hendersonville in the home purchased for him by his now famous son, Ray held on to his racist views. One afternoon, Cash dropped by with his daughters and a young Jamaican boy named Anthony, who worked on his Caribbean property, Cinnamon Hill. When they stood up to leave, the children naturally called out, "Goodbye, Grandpa." And Anthony, excited to be in America for the first time, also shouted out, "Goodbye, Grandpa." Ray whirled round and said, "No nigger's ever going to call me Grandpa. In fact, I don't even like having niggers in my house." Mortified, Cash never took Anthony back to his parents' home. "I should have realized that some things will never change about my dad," he said. He grew up in Arkansas. After the First World War, Ray met Carrie Rivers in Kingsland, Arkansas. Born in nearby Risen on May 13, 1897, Ray could trace his family back to Strathmiglow, Scotland, where William Cash lived before he left Glasgow in 1677 aboard Good Intent to settle in Essex County, Massachusetts. Subsequent generations of Cashes moved south to Virginia, farther south to Georgia, and eventually inland to Arkansas. The first John Cash was born in 1757 and fought in the Revolutionary War. His grandson Reuben Moses Cash served in the Confederate Army. Reuben's son William Henry Cash, a farmer and then a Baptist preacher, fathered Ray Cash. Ray had 11 brothers and sisters, although only 7 of them reached adulthood. Raised on the farm, they left school at 14 after a rudimentary education to pick cotton. By the time Ray joined the Army, just shy of 20, both of his parents had died. He went first to New Mexico with the 2nd Arkansas Infantry, where he helped protect border towns from Pancho Villa's bandits, and then, in August 1918, he received orders to report for duty in France. Fortunately, by the time he was fully combat trained, the armistice had been signed, and he found himself reassigned to low-key convoy duties. Carrie Rivers' ancestors likewise came from Britain. It was said that 5 Rivers brothers left Hampshire, England in the 18th century, 1 settling in Virginia and 4 in South Carolina. 2 of the South Carolina settlers established themselves in Chesterfield, close to the North Carolina border, where Carrie's father, John Lewis Rivers, was born in 1866. At 26, he left Chesterfield with 2 other families and took the train to Kingsland, Arkansas. Once settled, he married Rosanna Lee Hurst, the daughter of one of those families, and Carrie Rivers was born on March 13, 1904. Recognized as a godly man, John Lewis Rivers also had an ear for music, leading the singing at Crossroads Methodist Church in Kingsland for 40 years. When Ray Cash received his discharge from the Army on July 1, 1919, he returned home to Risen. He soon found work with his brother, felling oak and cypress trees near Kingsland to build a bridge over the Saline River. For $1 a day, they lodged and ate with John and Rosanna Rivers, who lived in the nearby Crossroads community. Ray struck up a relationship with their daughter, Carrie. He was 22 and she was 15. A year later, on August 18, 1920, they married, and in 1921, Carrie gave birth to their first child, Roy. 3 years later came their first daughter, Margaret Louise, always known as Louise, followed by Jack in 1929. In almost every way, Ray and Carrie were opposites. She was cheerful and outgoing, self-controlled and consistent. He tended to be sullen and withdrawn, always harboring a wild streak of unpredictability. Carrie, a lifelong devoted Methodist, was a teetotaler. Ray, a backsliding Baptist, enjoyed his spirits to excess. Even physically they clashed. She tall and slim, he short and broad. While winter snow still covered the ground, Carrie, with the help of a local midwife, gave birth to their 3rd son, J.R. Cash, at home on February 26, 1932. Time would show that this boy would literally embody all of his parents' extremes. He was a man who had his mother's height and his father's breadth. One minute he could have her cheerful and friendly disposition, and then suddenly plunge into the harder, more rigid moods of his father. He could keep the faith like his mother, but would just as easily backslide like his father. And while he could display Carrie's respect for discipline, he would often reproduce Ray's wild and uncontrollable behavior. Even choosing his name pulled his parents in different directions. His mother wanted to call him John after John Lewis Rivers, but his father wanted to call him Ray after himself. Ray John Cash didn't suit Carrie, and John Ray Cash didn't suit Ray. So they compromised by naming him J.R. Cash. "Did you ever have an imaginary friend?" Tara asked in another question for her parent journal. "Yes," he told her. "Sometimes I'm 2 people. Johnny's the nice one. Cash causes all the trouble. They fight." The 1930s were difficult days for Southern sharecroppers like Ray Cash. Bank foreclosures had brought mass unemployment, and the price of cotton had dropped more than 80%. A 500-pound bale that was worth $125 in 1928 would only raise $25 in 1932. Ray took any work available to provide for his expanding family. He walked miles to cut wood in a sawmill, drove cattle, worked his brother's farm, and even hopped freight trains to Charleston, Mississippi, to dismantle a chemical plant.